Coming up on today's program, stories of public service and spring cleaning. I'm Jerry Kenney. This is WISO Weekend. As always, thanks for sharing your weekend with WISO. Coming up later in the program, we've got Bird Note, and today from the Ohio Newsroom. Up first, Bishop Richard Earl Cox dedicated his life to speaking out against what he believed to be social injustice oppressing a community's marginalized citizens. He died after a lengthy illness on May 2nd at the age of 77. Bishop Cox was president of the Clergy Community Coalition. Its most recent campaign was to create a public hospital in West Dayton after the closing and demolition of Good Samaritan Hospital. WISO's Catherine Mobley covered many of the coalition's efforts. She shares this remembrance of the group's passionately vocal leader.
They took Good Samaritan Hospital out of our community. We had no health care. When you kill a community, what can we do but protest and raise hell and fight back?
June 9, 2020, Bishop Richard Earl Cox enthusiastically reminded Dayton residents what the West Dayton community lost after the closing of Good Samaritan Hospital almost 2 years earlier and during its demolition. He and other members of the Clergy Community Coalition, more commonly called the CCC, held a rally in Dayton's downtown Courthouse Square, promoting their singular objective, the creation of a new multi-service public hospital in West Dayton.
He felt that he had a responsibility to be out there and fighting and struggling for others.
Father Benjamin Spear Hardy II stood side by side with Bishop Cox on the front lines of what Spear Hardy describes as a difficult and very unusual community fight.
I had what they call a black bullhorn. And we went out with some of the retired nurses from Good Sam and some of the members of the West Dayton Caravan of Churches, and we were in the streets, downtown Main Street in front of Premier Headquarters. Winter, spring, summer, fall, we were down there protesting.
The CCC is affiliated with the West Dayton Caravan of Churches. Spear Hardy is president of the caravan. Bishop Richard Earl Cox was born October 4, 1948, in Middletown, Ohio, to the late Eugene and Amanda Cox. He had three sisters and six brothers. When he was 12, he felt a spiritual calling to ministry under the guidance of Reverend James Holloman at United Missionary Baptist Church. In 1966, Holloman tapped Cox to lead the church youth.
I was 6 years old. We were called the Buds of Promise. And there were about 15 to 20 of us kids in the church.
Reverend Rockney Carter recalls meeting the then 20-year-old Richard Cox, a Wilberforce University student and youth pastor.
There was such a zeal in his face and in his eyes. We adored him.
Carter warmly smiles as he reminisces how Cox used songs, stories, and activities to help his class understand complex scriptures. Then, Carter says Cox mentored the youngsters through a life-changing experience in 1968.
There were 15 of us that got baptized, young kids, on Easter Sunday, 1968, in the aftermath of the brutal assassination of Martin Luther King Jr., led by Richard Cox. I'll never forget it. He led me to Christ.
Bishop Cox led congregations in Ohio, West Virginia, Western Pennsylvania, and in Northwest Florida. In 1999, he and his wife, Apostle Gloria Wright Cox, opened the doors to Parenthood Ministries in Dayton. He was later consecrated as bishop. Cox also lent his voice to the civil rights movement, seeking voting, education, and economic rights for African Americans. He served as president of the Dayton chapter of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference and on the national board. He fought alongside international icons like Martin Luther King Jr., and in March 1965, Cox joined hundreds of protesters in Selma, Alabama, led by the Honorable John Lewis, as they attempted to cross the Edmund Pettus Bridge.
You are ordered to disperse, go home, or go to your church. This march will not continue.
State troopers attacked. In the chaos, Cox scrambled to help his fellow foot soldiers on that bloody Sunday. Last March, the bishop spoke about his close friend, Reverend Jesse Jackson, during a special service at St. Margaret's Episcopal Church in Trotwood.
He encouraged us in the face of disappointment and discouragement and chaos to remember that the morning comes. And when the morning comes, your faith increases. When your faith increases, you love each other. When your faith increases, you have the courage to stand up. When your faith increases, you have the courage to trust God.
Recently, health complications required Cox to use a walker or a wheelchair. Yet Father Ben says this didn't slow him down.
Even he couldn't make it up the stairs, but he would get help to get up there, to get up to City Hall or be in the streets or whatever it is. It didn't hold him back. He was on a mission.
After years of strategizing, protesting, seeking legal counsel, and imploring community support, in November 2025, more than 9,400 registered Dayton voters approved a one-mill tax levy toward a public hospital. As Bishop Cox reflected on this victory, he recognized the one person who tirelessly supported him, his wife of 19 years, Gloria. Some called Bishop Richard Cox controversial because he openly criticized public officials and business leaders, especially when their actions further disenfranchised others. During one of our last conversations, he was thinking ahead to the November 2026 midterm elections. He believed when all citizens blend their voices into one united chorus, greater progress is achieved in the continuing fight for social equality.
Democracy starts with you. And if people get together who are registered voters, unite with politicians, change can happen.
Reporting for WYSO News, I'm Catherine Mobley.
You can find more of Catherine's reporting on our website at WYSO.org. Well, when Kettering Mayor Brian Suddeth took office in January, he became the city's 12th mayor. Suddeth says he became interested in the position during his 2 years serving on city council. He calls former longtime Mayor Peggy Lehner a friend and mentor and says he's working hard to fill her shoes. For WISO's City Mayor series, I spoke with Suddeth about his term so far and what he's hearing from the citizens of Kettering.
Yeah, you know, what I'm hearing from residents here is mostly two things. One are vacant storefronts, and B, property maintenance. That seems to be the theme that I heard throughout the campaign over the last year, that residents want to see a Kettering that looks visually the way it did when they chose to come here maybe 30, 40, some 50 years ago. So, and that storefront piece is really just a response to the economic conditions of the entire suburban and Miami Valley community. How do we re-envision what those spaces will look like that we've moved, that the consumers have moved from storefront retail? How do we re-envision for what's next for those spaces?
The aesthetics of living in a community certainly was important to a lot of people we spoke with, and that falls right in line with that. Speaking of long-term visions that you talked about with former Mayor Lehner, what do you see for the city of Kettering 10, 15, even 20 years down the road?
Yeah, you know, we've just finished the first comprehensive land use plan that we've had in probably two decades. And that document has sort of re-envisioned our five major retail spaces in Kettering. You know, we have these little, we call them pearls that sort of connect. We don't have a traditional downtown, but we have these little retail hotspots. And so that plan helped us engage with hundreds of residents to re-envision what those would look like. And that includes walkability and traffic and how accessible these places are, and what the even down to what the streetscapes will look like with trees and landscaping, and how we treat those like five miniature downtowns spread across our city.
Yeah, a lot of cities are actually going for like an arts and culture district, so you're trying to do that on a maybe a smaller scale with remote locations?
Correct. You know, without one cohesive downtown, you know, we're a city of 58,000 people, and so we have like five distinct shopping retail areas that all deserve attention, and we can't say to the folks in East Kettering that we're going to focus on Town and Country and West Kettering, right? We have Street Mall, Wilmington Plaza, the Oaks. We have places that all deserve our time and attention, but those plans that we're making now, we won't see come to fruition, like you said, maybe 10 years, 12 years down the road.
What do you like about the city of Kettering?
Wow. You know, we chose to bring our kids here and raise our kids here 25 years ago, and it really was a combination of high-quality schools, the dedication to parks and open spaces, and just an overall the safety. For a town of 58,000, we have the ability to give it a really small-town feel, and people are really tied to their neighborhood parks, their neighborhood schools, and their neighborhoods. East Kettering is distinctly different than parts of West Kettering, and the center of Kettering is different. And that's what I love about it. There's a piece of Kettering that can appeal to anybody at almost any income level as well.
Any other challenges, opportunities for the city that you want to highlight?
You know, we're really focused on our business community. For so long, we've not given them the attention that they perhaps need or deserve. And with the absence of an organized chamber of commerce in our city, we really see an opportunity to start to bring those people together. And I'm leaning on the Economic Development Department here to help lead that charge. And we're excited about what we're doing with businesses to help them create a vision for how they work together and what a new organization might look like in the future. And we're hoping this fall to make an announcement about what the next generation of business collaboration or cooperation looks like in Kettering.
You mentioned future development plan. When do you determine some definite actions to come out of that plan?
I'll tell you, the plan is out there, and so it is available for review by residents, so you can kind of see what those five priority areas look like or what they could look like. We're in the process of updating maps and zoning codes now, and I think we're going to start to see shovels and activity by fall. So as soon as we release that plan and lift a moratorium on so many businesses, and we have a better understanding of where we want those businesses and where they're going to be permitted to be, we're going to see some action start this fall. So that it's not going to take long before residents see things changing.
And they can see those plans on city government website?
Yeah, at ketteringoh.org. And if you click comprehensive plan, you can see maps and sort of how we've envisioned what Town and Country or Strutmar or the Triangle and Wilmington and Woodman will look like in 10 years to come.
Kettering Mayor Brian Suddeth, it's been a pleasure.
Yeah, Jerry, thanks for coming to the office today and spending time talking about the city I love.
This is WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. I'm Jerry Kenny. Ohio resident Jim Obergefell was the lead plaintiff in the Supreme Court case that legalized same-sex marriage nationwide. While recently in Yellow Springs, he spoke about what he perceives as growing attacks on LGBTQ plus rights and efforts to challenge protections he fought to secure. WISO's Lee Wade reports.
More than a decade after the Supreme Court legalized same-sex marriage nationwide, Jim Obergefell says he's alarmed by the political direction the country has taken on LGBTQ plus rights. He says when the marriage equality decision came down in 2015 in his case, it felt like the country was moving forward. But now, he says, that progress feels uncertain.
Another emotion I feel, unfortunately, is anger at how our society, our state, our country continually attacks the queer community, especially the trans community. And, you know, 11 years ago when the marriage equality decision came down, it felt like our country was heading in the right direction. And these days it doesn't feel that way.
Obergefell pointed to what he sees as a political backlash following the legislation of same-sex marriage. And he emphasized the importance of solidarity across marginalized communities and urged both LGBTQ plus people and allies to stay engaged through voting, advocacy, and storytelling.
I didn't go to the Supreme Court just so white cisgender gay men could get married. I went so anyone could marry the person they love. And that experience changed me profoundly. And I have to keep fighting to make sure all marginalized communities have the ability, the right to live their lives on an equal footing and enjoy all of those same rights, protections, and responsibilities.
For WYSO, I'm Lee Wade.
In other news, the Urbana City Council has started the process to roll back zoning changes made last year that made it easier for data centers to be built there. They approved a resolution on May 4th to review those zoning codes. That follows a moratorium on new data centers that was passed in March. WISO's Nick Herkman has the update.
Community members and environmental groups have been concerned about the impact of development on the Cedar Bog, especially if the proposed development were to include a data center, which can consume millions of gallons of fresh water per day for cooling. Madison Shepherd is the preserve manager at Cedar Bog Nature Preserve.
Water is the most important part of Cedar Bog. If we don't have water, we do not have Cedar Bog. So any change in water quality or water quantity or even temperature, anything that's a small, minute change drastically changes the hydrology of Cedar Bog and therefore plants and the wildlife that come with it.
The resolution doesn't immediately change zoning rules. The Urbana Planning Commission must first review the proposal and issue a recommendation, at which point it will return to the council for another vote. Thor Equities, the development team behind the proposed Urbana Technology Hub, said in a statement that it remains committed to a transparent and collaborative process with the city of Urbana and its residents. The Planning Commission is scheduled to meet again on Monday, May 18th. For WYSO News, I'm Nick Kirkman.
This is WYSO Weekend. Thanks so much for joining us. Up next on Today from the Ohio Newsroom, historic audio returns home.
Support for the Ohio Newsroom comes from Cerity Partners. Cerity Partners' Cleveland-based wealth management practice helps bring clarity to complexity because money doesn't come with instructions. Information available at CerityPartners.com/NPR.
Today from the Ohio Newsroom takes you around the state, connecting you with news and neighbors from all over Ohio. I'm Kendall Crawford. Last year, a group of archivists took CDs and reel-to-reel tapes out of a dusty closet at WCSU, Central State University's radio station in Wilberforce. They spent months digitizing and restoring the recordings as a part of a nationwide effort to protect radio history at historically Black colleges and universities. Tomorrow, those sounds are coming home, not in a box or in an email, but through a homecoming celebration at WYSO in Yellow Springs.
These institutions are critical parts of those communities.
That's Phyllis Jeffers Coley, the HBCU Radio Preservation Project's Assistant Director of Administration and Outreach.
And they document what's there. They contribute to what's there. They're woven into those Black communities all over the country.
Jeffers Coley and her colleagues recovered around 24 hours worth of recordings from WCSU, the nation's first federally licensed HBCU radio station.
At WCSU FM 88.9.
They capture years of campus and community life.
Today we are featuring Greene County Public Health.
Including conversations with civil rights advocates.
We have the power, sisters, to make a difference. We have the power to change our community.
And interviews with local artists.
This is WCSU Studio Sessions Acts, Art Communicates the Soul. I'm your host, Dr. Vanita Kelly. Listen out.
They also capture moments of community grief. There's reports covering Toni Morrison's passing and the 2019 mass shootings in Dayton.
And we want to know, Senator, now, having read your statements about the shootings in Dayton, what are the next steps?
It's not just about preserving these moments in time. Jeffers Coley says the project also records interviews with the station's former staff and alumni to give a first-person account on what it was like to make these historic recordings. Preservationist Will Checkeritis spoke with John Garland, former president of Central State University, last June. In that interview, Garland said the station helped keep students informed during the civil rights movement.
It was a lifeblood. It was a lifeline to what was going on campus. And when I was a student, the community of Xenia was not welcoming to us. There was an organized campaign that would march into Xenia to desegregate facilities. And that's what we would do. Brave the cold, because it got cold, and we would march the 4 miles from Wilberforce to Xenia.
These oral histories will become part of the broader archive returning to WCSU. Outreach coordinator Jeffers Coley says the handoff of the audio itself is designed to feel ceremonial.
We'll give them this beautiful, stylized, sleek black box with the hard drive in it, a placard with unique and original artwork, and we'll celebrate the current station manager and staff at the station and do an official return of the materials to the institution.
She says that's important for HBCUs right now.
In this moment where there's a significant attempt or apparent attempt to erase or ignore or rewrite history broadly, it's important to say they've been here. They're still here, and they're worth celebrating. And I mean, fundamentally, you can't erase the history.
That handoff And the celebration of WCSU's legacy is tomorrow at WYSO in Yellow Springs. That's all today from the Ohio Newsroom. We'll talk with you tomorrow.
Up next on WYSO Weekend, when we think of spring cleaning, we may think of organizing the house or garage or cleaning up the car. But officials at the Ohio Department of Commerce want us to think about cleaning up our personal finances. WYSO's Mike Frazier spoke with Robert Rutkowski, the Deputy Superintendent for the Division of Financial Institutions at the Ohio Department of Commerce, and he's got these tips to share.
The biggest thing is subscription creep. It's very easy to sign up for subscriptions, but very hard to cancel. You know, it's one click to get in, but then you have to make phone calls during business hours to get out, right? So having an initial sweep of your streaming services and your gym memberships and everything that you spend money on monthly, looking at that and asking yourself, am I still using this? Because that those services that people don't use but still pay for, the on average, that's $200 a year that gets basically thrown away.
For people who might find it hard to unsubscribe to some services like Amazon Prime or Netflix, do you have any advice on helping them out?
My wife went through this just the other day, and she started by Googling it, and I would think that that's definitely the best way to start. But getting an AI to help you, Copilot, ChatGPT, Perplexity, Grok, Gemini, there's so many options now, right? And talking with them about it, they can show you the hidden tricks to help you get out of the most complicated subscriptions.
Okay. Other spring cleaning advice?
Old paperwork. It's important to know what to keep and what to throw away. And generally, you know, if your tax situation is pretty simple, then 3 years. You can keep your tax records for 3 years. But if you're an investor and you have complicated taxes, then you're looking at 7 years. For example, worthless stock losses. To offset the losses for those, you have to keep the records for 7 years. And real property, 3 years after the sale of the property, keep those records, and employment taxes, 4 years. But going through the old paperwork, clearing all that out, freeing up space for, sadly, more paperwork, that's a good part of the spring cleaning process.
What about people's personal budget with the gas prices high and inflation? How can people manage their budget more efficiently?
What I've read in my research, the way to deal with this is to take as much out of the willpower part of it as you can, because willpower is a finite resource. And if you're trying to do all of this in your head, then it's going to wear you out really quickly. So think of it like a thermostat for your house. You're not sitting there micromanaging your thermostat all day. It just does it. So if you can set things up to automate your finances and automate the changes that you're making to give you the benefits, that will take some of the mental stress out of it. For example, I mean, automatic bill pay is just the beginning. And there's things that are suitable for automatic bill pay, your electric, what have you, the recurring costs that you're not going to be surprised about. And there's things you might not want to automatically pay, right? But when you set that up, set up the pay yourself first concept as well. So if you are cutting back streaming services, then identify those and then have your bank or credit union withdraw that money and then put it into a target account, whether it's a savings account or, you know, a brokerage account every single month. So it's automated and you can look and you can see the progress that you're making. That takes a lot of that mental overhead out of your life.
I see. So that money is automatically taken out and then, you know, bit by bit, that destination account, if you will, builds up and builds up. And so when you check your financial records or your bank records, you have perhaps more money there than you expected.
Exactly. Exactly. I think the important thing is that in terms of personal finance, psychology is just as important as learning the ins and outs of personal finance. You have to know yourself, what am I going to do with a budget? Am I going to do what best with a spreadsheet? Am I going to do best with an app? Am I going to do best by writing it out in the back of a napkin? Whatever I'm going to do best and what I'm going to keep going for, that's what you have to do. You want to get started and stick with it.
That was Robert Rutkowski, Deputy Superintendent for the Division of Financial Institutions at the Ohio Department of Commerce, speaking with WISO's Mike Frazier. Rutkowski adds that there are other financial tips to be found at com.ohio.gov/consumer affairs.
This is Bird Note. On the Gulf of Mexico, a long, low sandbar marks the entrance to a protected expanse of water, a lagoon. Small fish dart across the lagoon, riffling the ankle-deep water. A reddish egret waits, watching alertly. The reddish egret, a particularly glamorous heron, is named for the ruffled plumes of its long neck, which gleam like burnished copper. The egret stands nearly 3 feet tall, on lanky, cobalt-blue legs. Its bill, a long pink dagger, is tipped in black. Exquisite, yes, but reddish egrets are best known for their startling antics in capturing fish. When fishing, the egret sprints across the lagoon, weaving left and right, simultaneously flicking its broad wings in and out while stabbing into the water with its bill. Fish, startled at the egret's crazed movements, become targets of that pink dagger. This is just one of the reddish egret's several fishing tactics. At times, the bird will raise its wings forward over its head, creating a shadow on the water. It then freezes in this position for minutes. Fish swim in, attracted by a patch of shade, and, well, you know the rest. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein. Support comes from Wild Delight Bird Food, offering a variety of blends designed to mimic the natural resources wild birds crave. Available at Chewy.com.
Bird Note, putting a wrap on this edition of WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. And don't forget, this program is available wherever you get your podcasts. Just download and subscribe and share with your friends on social media. Our theme music is Another Beautiful Day in Paradise by Magnolia Bolthead. I'm Jerry Kenny. Join us again next weekend. We'll share more highlights and conversations with you then.